Turpin v. Colvin, 13-1637. Ms. De La Torre.
May it please the Court. My name is Adriana De La Torre, and I represent the appellant, Mr. Russell Turpin, who appeals the District Court's denial of his petition for attorney fees under the Equal Access to Justice Act, or EJA. The District Court abused its discretion in denying EJA fees. In this case, the agency was not substantially justified for two reasons. First, the agency failed to consider important mental health records which were submitted to the ALJ and the Appeals Council. And second, the ALJ mischaracterized and disregarded a significant body of evidence when concluding that Mr. Turpin had a successful work history, despite having 47 jobs in 17 years. These are not minor or insignificant errors. Each of these errors, in its own right, goes to the very heart of Mr. Turpin's disability application. The agency's failure to consider relevant mental health records violated well-established agency policy requiring a longitudinal view of mental health impairments. In this case, Mr. Turpin timely submitted his military records within the post-hearing period allowed by the ALJ, but the records were not considered. They weren't listed as an exhibit, despite the fact that the ALJ was aware of the existence of the records and was expecting them. 10 days after receiving the ALJ's denial, Mr. Turpin appealed it. He stressed that the military records were not considered. He immediately resubmitted the military records, but again, they were not considered by the Appeals Council. This was a critical error by the agency. The sole basis for Mr. Turpin's disability application is his mental impairment. And these military records show that Mr. Turpin had a long-standing personality disorder that was not considered by the ALJ or the Appeals Council. The agency relies on the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual of Mental Disorders, also known as the DSM, when evaluating mental health impairments. It assesses mental conditions in a multi-axial approach. Personality disorders are access to diagnosis. Personality disorders like mental retardation and autism are lifelong conditions. They go with the life of the person. On the other hand, access one diagnosis, depression and anxiety. They're adult onset clinical syndromes that can be cured with treatment. Personality disorders can't. And that's why these records are so important. And the agency's failure to consider these records was a significant error that materially impacted the agency's assessment of Mr. Turpin's mental condition, the sole basis for his disability claim. Likewise, the commissioner's defense of the error was not substantially justified because her position goes against well-established policy requiring a longitudinal view of mental impairments. In this case, the ALJ also mischaracterized Mr. Turpin's work history as successful, despite decades of evidence that shows that he cannot hold a steady job due to his mental conditions. The record shows that he has had 47 jobs in 17 years for an average duration of 4 months per job. This work history cannot be characterized as successful, and the ALJ's mischaracterization points to a serious lack of understanding of Mr. Turpin's mental condition.
What was the relevant time period here for the military, the 17 years, and then the relevant period of disability?
The military records themselves are from 1991. Mm-hmm. Mr. Turpin, based on his application for supplemental security income, can only get disability benefits as of the time that he applied, right, up until the period of the ALJ's review. However, evidence that's submitted...
No, I understand that, but would you answer my question about what time periods we're talking about? For the military records, 1991, the 17-year work history, and the time of the application, please.
Because of Mr. Turpin's diagnosis, his mental condition as his basis, the whole period is relevant.
That's not my question. I'm asking a very simple question about the calendar.
Yes.
When were the 17 years that we're talking about?
17 years prior to his date of application. So we're talking
Which
about 2009 when? Minus 17, and my
okay.
math is
92,
not that good.
92 to 2009.
Yes, Your Honor.
Thank you.
Thank you. Because the ALJ disregarded this significant body of evidence, it shows that the agency was not substantially justified. On the merits, the commissioner attempted to justify the ALJ's mischaracterization by saying the 17-year period was irrelevant. But again, this goes against agency policy requiring a longitudinal evaluation. Moreover, when addressing the EJIA petition on its merits, the commissioner did not address this as a basis for being substantially justified. Because the agency was not substantially justified, the district court abused its discretion in denying the EJIA fee petition in its entirety. But even if the agency was substantially justified in part, then the district court should have considered a partial fee award.
Let me ask you about that. Did you make that argument below before Judge Magna Stinson?
We had asked for the full award because the agency was not substantially justified.
But did you make the partial award argument?
Not specifically.
So your first making of that is here on appeal, correct?
Not necessarily, Your Honor. The partial fee awards are within the district court's discretion. This court has recognized that. Not specifically, no.
When
you say not specifically, are you implying something else, that you argued it in part or in some way you argued it?
There was no language in...
You did argue it or you didn't argue it? Anything in your petition, is there anything in your petition that says, and if we're not awarded the full award, we are entitled to a partial award because of this or that?
I believe we had indicated that an appropriate award would be necessary in this case, and because an appropriate award in this case, since
the
there's no...
The answer then is no.
Okay.
That's what I'm going to take from your answer.
Okay. But it's within the district court's discretion, and that's what we're looking at here. But the district court did not even consider awarding a partial fee. Therefore, the district court abused its discretion, and we request that the case be remanded.
Under what authority does the district court have authority to award a partial fee award?
This court is recognizing Gitimi v. Holder that it's within the district's discretion, and the EJIA statute itself says that the district court reduce the amount to be awarded pursuant to this section.
Where in Gitimi did we say the district court can do that? We can imagine trying to allocate fees, but we can't find a case in which that's been done. That sounds short of a holding to me.
It hasn't been done, and the language in Gitimi is dicta. That is, of course, true.
And we've repeatedly said the district court has to assess the agency's position as a whole.
Yes, under the totality of the circumstances.
Okay, so you're asking us, as I understand it now, to break new ground, contradict some prior cases on the basis of an argument not made to the district court.
I don't think that's necessarily true.
Okay. What's wrong? What's incorrect about that?
This court has recognized that it's within the district court's discretion to do so.
In Gitimi?
In Gitimi v. Holder, and it discusses...
Well, that's not what we said in Gitimi. Anything else?
The Act itself discusses the ability to reduce the amount to be awarded, and therefore it's within the discretion to approve a partial award if... And that would be consistent with the policy and purpose of EJIA, which would be to promote private attorneys to represent individuals against the government.
Where does the Act do that?
The specific language of the Act, Your Honor, is reduce the amount to be awarded pursuant to the subsection. I don't have the page in front of me, but it also says, or deny an award to the extent that the prevailing party during the course of the proceedings engaged in conduct which unduly or unreasonably protracted the final resolution of matter in this controversy. I see that my time is up. And
all right. Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Elysia.
Jimmy, my former clerk. Thank you.
May it please the Court, Brian Alicia on behalf of the Commissioner of Social Security. In reviewing this case, the overriding concern should be the standard of review, and that is abuse of discretion. And this Court has held that it will not reverse a substantial justification finding unless the record commands the conclusion that the District Court made a mistake. Here, the District Court did not abuse its discretion. It properly considered the entirety of the Commissioner's position, and it noted that it remanded on very narrow grounds. It found that the potential for reasonable disagreement on the very narrow grounds upon which it remanded negated any inference that the government was being careless or oppressive with regards to Mr. Turpin. After finding that there was reasonable disagreement on these narrow issues, the Court then specifically considered the nature of these issues. First, in its order, the Court noted that it remanded on a factual procedural issue concerning whether Mr. Turpin timely produced his military records. And as to these records, the Court, in its merits decision, found that the only reference to them in the record was a fax line indicating that they were produced well outside the 30-day period that the ALJ gave Mr. Turpin to produce these records. The Court also reasonably considered that the records were not referenced in the ALJ decision. And then on the other hand, it considered that Mr. Turpin had contended that he timely submitted the records and that he readily produced them to the Appeals Council. Now, this Court has recognized the language in a merits decision is a significant factor in determining whether the government's position was substantially justified. And here, the Court found that it was not there to make an independent factual determination as to whether Mr. Turpin timely produced his military records in the first instance. It also said that on remand, the Commissioner was not required to consider these records unless the ALJ determined that they were timely. As to the second issue, the Court also found that this was narrow, and in its order it found that it was remanding for clarification as to the ALJ's findings on Mr. Turpin's work history. In its merits decision, it found that the ALJ failed to build a logical bridge as to how the work history could be considered successful. At the same time, in its merits decision, it remanded for the ALJ to either explain how this history could be considered successful or evaluate Mr. Turpin's claim in light of any longitudinal difficulties in maintaining employment over such period as the ALJ explains is relevant. And this Court has characterized as deliberately flexible the requirement that an ALJ articulate his consideration of the evidence. This Court has also held that a finding that the ALJ did not satisfy the articulation requirement does not necessitate necessarily a finding that the Commissioner's position was not substantially justified. Finally, Mr. Turpin raises the issue of partial allocation of EJIA fees and asks that this Court allocate the fees according to the issues that the District Court found in his favor. However, as the Court pointed out, counsel can't say that the District Court abused its discretion in not awarding a partial EJIA award when this issue was not before it and was not provided for in Seventh Circuit precedent. And indeed, in briefing, counsel notes that it did not oppose a partial award because counsel was never given the opportunity. And in the EJIA briefing before the District Court, the Commissioner was unable to find any reference to a request for a partial fee award, nor any legal argument as to the basis for a partial fee award.
Did you argue in your brief to us that that argument was waived or forfeited?
Your Honor, we argued that it was not provided for under Seventh Circuit precedent.
All right. Thank you.
And as far as the Gattini case, the Court in Gattini expressly declined to reach the issue because it found no authority for partial allocation of fees. Now, the Aegis statute does provide the only reference actually to the word partial or portion in the Aegis statute is in the definition of position. It states that fees and expenses may not be awarded to a party for any portion of the litigation in which the party has unreasonably protracted the proceedings. Now, this does not establish authority for a partial fee award. And if anything, it shows that when Congress wanted to refer to a portion, it expressly did so. There's no express provision for a partial allocation of a fee award in the statute itself. And for these reasons, we would respectfully request that the Court affirm the District Court's decision.
Thank you. Ms. De La Torre.
May it please the Court. Very briefly, Your Honors. The Commissioner's position can be distilled down to it's an abuse of discretion standard, so there's really not much to see here. But an abuse of discretion standard, it's not a blank check. It's not toothless. It requires a meaningful examination. And a meaningful examination in this case shows that the agency was not substantially justified, and therefore the District Court abused its discretion in denying the Aegis fee petition. Therefore, we request that this matter be remanded to the District Court for an appropriate award of attorney fees under the EJA. Thank you for your time and consideration.
All right. Thank you to both counsel and Ms. De La Torre, to you and your firm for...